This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the...
The Place to Be.
The Place to Be, yes, the Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
JR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually write a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying
you're curious
day...
I'm curious how I have more free time than
no,
you.
No, I'm going to...
So what does that mean?
I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I know you said this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking around for the next hour?
Come on. Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
It was big.
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is a shock wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
You go all through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation. Let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live here on this Wednesday evening from the PTB Man Cave. And joining me, as always, the man who ages maybe quite as fine as wine, maybe not as well. That's, of course, my PIC, Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Nothing's better than a good Chianti, of course. Yes. Or a nice
Chianti.
Carlo Rossi Paisano. Good evening, JR. Good evening, PTB Nation. Welcome, everyone, to episode 242 of the Place to Be Podcast. I feel like, and I was thinking about this the other day I was listening to some of our older stuff. I feel like 101 to 200 like flew.
Mm.
And I feel like, and this is not because the shows are bad by any stretch, but I feel like since 201 we've kind of gone, I feel like at a much more deliberate pace.
You really think so? I can't believe we're already halfway through the 200s almost.
Really? I feel like we're going much slower. I don't know. I know we're not going slower. We're doing our usual 2-week pace. I just feel like this has been a little slower, but it doesn't matter. This episode's been awesome, and we thank PTB Nation for that, as always.
Maybe you're just Wednesday processing night. Them slower as you get older.
Yeah, maybe. Yes. Yeah, I kind of set myself up for that, but that's true. All right, welcome in again to 242 of the Place to Be Podcast. On this post-trade deadline time, 4 o'clock has come and gone.
Yeah, not much action.
Anything. No.
And, of course, there
you
will be...
You didn't buy, we didn't sell.
There'll be a little bit of Return of the Hack up tomorrow.
Ah, I see. Yes.
Breaking down the winners and losers. But there is some big news, Scott, breaking right now. I don't know if you saw this, if you caught the major story that came out in the last hour or so.
No, I did not. I was on my phone a lot today in the last hour and a half. I didn't see anything. But the last thing I saw, if it's involving baseball, trade-wise, obviously Bud Norris is an Oriole.
That's not important to me.
Yeah, and then a couple of other trades. But I'm sure it's probably, let me guess, it's probably Biogenesis related, isn't it?
It is, my friend.
Yes.
Because the word on the block
is
that over the next day or so, MLB is now prepared to officially ban A-Rod for life.
Wow.
An announcement will come tomorrow or Friday. A-Rod's going to appeal. MLB is basing his action not only on the use of PEDs, but on the fact that he purportedly lied to officials and attempted to sabotage their investigation.
Mm.
Now, I got a few things to say about this.
Okay.
To me, the investigation is ridiculous to me in just overall, just looking on the outside in. I get what they're trying to do. But to me, the investigation is almost, you know, it reminds me when Steinbrenner was, you know, hiding out and trying to dig up dirt on Dave Winfield.
Oh, Winfield and they banned him. Yeah.
And this is what they're doing. They're, like, snooping around. They're fucking trying to pay this doctor, like, $500,000 in unmarked bills and envelopes to get the documents. And then the stuff mysteriously gets stolen out of the guy's car and delivered to MLB and all this shit. All fucking really shady.
Yeah.
I think the way they went about this whole thing has been very capricious. I thought starting with the initial report, then the whole leaking of the names that were supposed to be secret from before 2003, that was horseshit, I thought. Right up to David Ortiz still looking for the mystery milkshake man or whatever the hell was going on with that. I haven't heard anything about that lately.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, everyone has, don't worry. you know, then right up to this whole thing where some guys are getting suspended, others aren't. You know, Bartolo Colon, these other guys already served their suspension last year and they're not going to hit him again. So all that said, also what kind of chaps me on this is that MLB has so many young talents and good stories, and they're all being overshadowed by this albatross that they keep dragging through the public eye. It's like, do the shit undercover, make your announcement, and move on. Why don't you hype we already pissed all over the All-Star game, we pissed over the Home Run Derby, now we're pissing on the trade deadline. You have all these great stories, you hear nothing about the Pirates, best record in baseball out of nowhere. You know, the Oakland still having another great year, Baltimore, all these teams are doing so well, and you have all these young stars, Mike Trout, Andrew McCutcheon. You know, all these guys, Manny Machado, all breaking out, and it's like, we hear nothing about those guys. You're fucking A-Rod. He's washed up. Let it go. Suspend him, whatever. I don't care. Ban him, but fucking focus on your product.
Exactly.
It's a joke. I mean, you think NBA or NFL would focus on this crap? No, they bury it in the back, and they focus on their stars.
Absolutely. Roger Goodell would not have any of this. He'd have guys killed.
Right. And he probably has.
Weird Snoopy.
Well, they got their own issues going. I mean, you know, it's another joke over there, too. Von Miller fails a roid test, and you don't hear anything about it. And he's in his prime. He's a star in his prime.
Yeah.
He's not washed up. Now, the Yankee side of me, and you know me, I've always been an A-Rod defender.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you have.
But I'm fine with this because they need to get out of this contract. They need the room, the payroll room. He's not what he used to be. And if they can somehow get out of these last 4 years at 20 to 25 million a year,
that'd be a miracle.
That is, I mean, they're going to be dancing up and down the fucking River Avenue with that.
Yeah.
I mean, unbelievable. Can you believe it? I mean, that puts them right back into the market. I mean, they thought they were going to have to cut down and not do anything these next time. Forget it. They're freeing up a shitload of cash. Bring Corona back. Bring them all back. Get all the money to spend.
Yeah. That is
bring
crazy.
Bring me all the players, Scott. All of them. So anyway, thought I'd get that out of the way. But for more on the trade deadline, yeah, check out PleaseToBeNation.com tomorrow afternoon. Be a recap, winners and losers. Surprise, spoiler here. I do not think Baltimore did well, so you can buckle up for that one.
Okay. What do you think of PV to the Red Sox?
Well, I don't want to spoil too much of my article, but tell you that they were my big winners of the trade deadline.
Okay. Well, more about that tomorrow on Place to Be Nation.
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of hand-wringing around here on the radio. I couldn't believe it. I almost drove into a tree listening to these fucking idiots call up and cry. You would have thought they were comparing Iglesias to the Jeff Bagwell trade. I mean, Bagwell's a Hall of Famer. Iglesias can't hit over 200. Fucking Jeff
Seriously?
Bagwell. Fucking
God.
Christ.
That's really? Like the people that called, that some of the people that called, like, the score, you know, both EI and the other station talking about, you know, we stabbed Nathan Horton in the back and let him go.
But that's different to me. I mean, Horton's good. Iglesias is a scrap heap.
Right.
He had the most overinflated batting average ever because his batting average on balls in play was like 500 because he got all infield singles that he legged out. And now over the last like 6 weeks or so, he's batting 167 and he's like slugging nothing. Hey, he's great on defense. That's awesome. But they got enough young talent. They don't need him. Mm-hmm. Get PV. They need pitching. I didn't get it. I couldn't believe they were calling in and crying the way they were. I don't know.
Very strange.
But anyway, we'll talk about that tomorrow in the hack. So yes. Stay tuned for that. And then stay tuned for a lot of celebratory posts from me if A-Rod does get the ban for life. The hammer.
Now they're talking about 8 or 9 names. Obviously, A-Rod will be one. Probably Nelson Cruz.
Yeah, well, Cruz, I mean, these guys are all probably going to take the 50. A lot of them are going to take it this year, it sounds like. And then they'll be good to go next year. They can start clean. Johnny Peralta. Some of them aren't going to get busted.
If I were Nelson Cruz, I'd wait. I mean, his Rangers are still in a pennant race. They really can't afford
not to have
his bat. Oh, that's true.
So, you know, they're wondering if, well, is he really going to affect, it may hurt him going into free agency to have to miss the first 50 games next year.
That is true. That
but
is true.
It sounds like Melky and Bartolo Colon are going to be okay because they already were suspended last year.
Right. So, well, let's talk about the pennant races. I think the team, I agree with you 100%. Like, you know, these guys all cheated. These guys all, you know, the bronze and all these. And meanwhile, kind of flying under the radar are the I'm amazed by the Pirates. Clint Hurdle's one of the most amazing managers of the last 10 years. He took a kind of not talentless but kind of a mediocre Rockies team to the World Series, and now he's taking a Pirate team that hasn't had a winning season since Francisco Cabrera singled them into oblivion in 92, and anyway, probably the best team in the National League. Might even be better than the Braves.
The best record. It's close. I mean, I like the Braves overall better, I think, but probably the Dodgers.
Experience.
But they are one of the best teams, and the Cardinals are starting to fade a little bit in the Central.
Well, they got injury problems. I'm surprised they didn't go after Peavy. I mean,
I can't believe Cliff Lee didn't get traded. I talk about this again tomorrow too. Is that I thought Baltimore gaffed this away because to me the AL in general is pretty soft, and you're not going to get many years now, especially if A-Rod gets banned and the Yankees are able to get back into things. You're not going to get many years like this where the East is this weak. I mean, Toronto is going to get better. The Sox are past their drop-off point, and Tampa just has tons of young talent in their pipeline. And to me, Baltimore's got a golden opportunity to strike now, and I know they want to build for the future and all this stuff, but you know, we talked about this, Scott. Look at Washington did last year. You know, they shot themselves in the foot benching Strasburg.
Yeah. And now you see Gio Gonzalez. He got fucking bombed today. And then even 10 runs in 3 innings.
And then even the Yankees. Remember, they didn't pull the trigger on Lee from Montero and Nunez a couple years ago, and that probably would have at least got them to the World Series that year. And I'm sure they regret that a little bit. Sometimes you have to make the move. And I think if Baltimore got Cliff Lee, they might have been the prohibitive favorite in the AL. I mean, you're just winning back these fans and all the goodwill and everything else. And I mean, it's not like Lee's a rental. You would have had him for the next 2 years after this. So this would have set you up. But, I mean, they need an ace bad. You know, Bud Norris is going to get it done. I mean, he's got like a 6 ERA outside of Minute Maid Park. So I don't know why this guy's looked at as a savior. Philly Hughes has better peripherals all around.
Yeah.
And speaking of Hughes, I can't believe Oakland didn't go for him. They probably could have gotten him fairly reasonable, and he'd be perfect in that park.
Yeah, I mean, they got, they got Colaspo.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll add a little something, you know, in the order and, you know, kind of shore up the infield a little bit, so.
Yeah, we could talk more about the pennant race in general on headlines in a few weeks. But
and
again, more on the trade deadline tomorrow on the website. But yeah, I wanted to get the A-Rod stuff out there because I hadn't seen any of it. I took a ride to my parents, came back, and I saw someone, I think it was Matt Souza, posted on Facebook a Nesson story, and I'm like, what the hell is this shit? And I thought it was just the same stuff that had been out there, and then I read it, and now it's on MLB Trade Rumors and on Twitter everywhere. That it looks like it's happening. So I don't know. From what I've heard, they said they were even going to block him from playing during his appeal as well.
Well, that'll save the Yankees.
A lot of guys can appeal and keep playing, but from what I read is they're going to not even allow him to do that, which would be great because then they don't have to pay for that either. So,
And
this is a huge benefit because the money they're going to save outweighs the production he was going to provide. So,
right. Well, your boy Chicken Fat Francesa has been saying like for the last like 2 days that Yankee fans are stupid for not wanting him.
Well, he
even
the
lineup, you need his stats, but he was a toe sucker for A-Rod. So
he worships him, and A-Rod comes on and gives him the exclusives and all that other shit. But I mean, that's his boy. It's going to gut him when this happens. But I mean, look, like I said, I've always been a defender, and even earlier in the year, I wanted him back. But once I realized this was a possibility, I reverse field quickly because to me, the state of the future of their team, having that money opened up over the next 4 years. To me, is way more important than whatever. I mean, his home run chase isn't going to mean anything anymore anyway. So what's the point? I mean, there's really no draw there. So I don't know. Go get me Chase Headley, Scott, please.
Sure. Talk to Mr. Woodling. That's his department. How come no Phillies went? Not even Michael Young.
I think the Yankees are going to get Young at the waiver deadline. I think the trade deadline got hurt by this extra wild card now. Because a lot more teams are in it still.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you look at it, there's only like 8 or 9 teams that are out, you know? So a lot of teams are hesitant. But now when you get to mid-August, you get to that waiver deadline, you know, things are looking a little bit more dicey for a lot of teams. So that's where you might see some of these guys start to fall. And the Yankees actually going to be a pretty good waiver position because, you know, they're in fourth in the division behind the Red Sox and the Rays and these other teams. So for the first time in a while, they're actually going to have a pretty prime waiver spot. So you may see them try and go after Young then.
Yeah. But again, we'll get more into this in a couple weeks with the headlines. Tonight, though, JR, we go back to a summer where both our teams were pretty good, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's about time tonight.
Time.
Look what you've done to me.
Two men.
I was going for the Hootie version.
Oh.
Hey, what is going on here?
You look like two men. Good God. Jesus. Haven't you sweat some of this fat off sitting in this thing all summer? Christ's sakes. All right.
You were really mean to him.
Oh, my God. Well, I saw him on, you know, I loved him on Steve with a Bell, but I saw him on an episode of Mad Men two or three seasons ago, and Jesus, God, he looked like he ate Slater. Good Lord. All right. It's about two men.
What did Preppy think of that?
Yeah. Two men. 1 hour, 60 minutes, 360 seconds, something like that.
Of course, we don't have any opening clip here because the opening was silence, movie style.
Yes, it was very good, too.
We'll roll a little Darius Rucker out here for you.
A little Darius Rucker and the boys, yes. Saw them live. Good band live. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, Judgment Day 2000.
One I've been looking forward to greatly. I mean, to me, this is, you know, 2000 is such a great year. And I'm curious your take on this. I don't think company-wise it was the peak, but I feel like maybe pay-per-view wise, we have very good ones after this.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously a great one still, you know, coming up in 01. We have some really, well, I feel like this is like creatively everything. This is like almost a near perfect pay-per-view.
Yeah, it is in many ways. And, I think I've been looking forward to this one too, JR, because I feel like you and I can finally debunk the WrestleMania 12 theory, and we'll get to that later. May 21st. Why? Because you booked that? Your problem. Don't ever interrupt me either on when I'm doing the date. May 21st, 2000, live from Freedom Hall in Louisville, Kentucky. We have been to Louisville before, JR, but we've never been in this building for pay-per-view. We've been to the old Louisville Gardens. That was where In Your House number 6 was.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that, yes, that was where In Your House Ground Zero was. So we're in a new building. Very legendary building for you college hoop junkies, Mr. Reish and such. Give us a little history, JR, of Freedom Hall.
Opened in 1956. Just about a week later than your birthday, the first mm-hmm. birthday, I think. Kentucky State Fair Board is the operator. Here are your tenants, Scott. It's quite a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
The Louisville Cardinal men and women NCAA basketball team. Of course, the Louisville Cardinals men's team has been there since it opened in 56.
Yes.
Played there to 2010.
Yep.
The KFC Yum Center.
The Yum Center, yes.
Louisville Rebels of the IHL played there for a few years. Kentucky Colonels of the ABA.
Yes.
The Louisville Fire of the AFL 2 or AF 2 Arena. Is that Arena 2?
Yeah, it was AFL 2, yeah. Yep.
Louisville Panthers of the AHL. Of course, the men's basketball NCAA tournament, women's tournament's been there. The SEC Big East Invitational was there.
Mm-hmm.
The Kentucky Extreme of the CIFL. And Scott, my favorite team of all time,
mm-hmm.
the National American. Hang on one sec. I want to make sure I get this right. The North American Lacrosse League, the Kentucky Stick Horses.
That is an awesome nickname.
And of course, also held there every November, the North American International Livestock Exposition. Derek LaRue was shown around.
Yes. Oh, God. The Stick Horses.
The Stick Horses.
The Stick Horses.
All right, so the attendance on this show was 16,827.
Yes.
And a little bit short of a sellout.
Okay. Wonder if they had issues with the facility. Maybe they had to block some seats.
It could have been the set.
Maybe they had to block some seats, yeah. It's not that they probably weren't sold. They probably weren't available.
Right.
Yeah. Your buy rate, pretty good as usual, 1.05. Your announcers, the voices of the Attitude Era, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. How are we in heat this evening, JR?
Heat? It's pretty cool here. We have the British Bulldog still futzing around, defeats Joey
wow.
Abs. S.A. Rios and Lita defeated Kai and Tai. It's kind of embarrassing. And The Godfather defeated D'Lo Brown.
Oh. They used to be buddies.
No they longer. Did. D'Lo turned on him on a Raw or SmackDown, one of the two, I forget.
Hmm.
D'Lo. Turn his back. Maybe cut off the Ho pipeline. I'll have to check out Barclay, see what the deal is there.
Yes. But the Ho pipeline will get cut off by The Godfather himself later on down the line. Talk about that soon.
Mm.
All right. Let's get this hot undercard started.
Scorching, baby.
Yes.
It's like all your takes.
Yes. Let us begin with a pretty swank six-man tag. The always buddies, Rikishi and Too Cool. Of course, Grandmaster Sexay and
hey, cool.
Scotty Too Hotty.
Too Cool.
Too Cool. Still in a role. Still probably, you know, top five tag teams in the federation.
In the league.
Promotion, in the league. Taking on this unbelievable trio of superstars. And, of course, still your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, Edge and Christian, taking on, or and their partner.
You were
partner.
Just not very good at this at all.
Well, because you know what? We're too busy talking about A-Rod. I didn't get a good song
You'll
prepared,
get better.
So.
You'll get better.
I didn't have a good song prepared, so. I could play it any time, but. Taking on your boy. And.
Oh, my God.
It's bad. Just talk while I find it.
Oh, my Lord. You're a fucking disaster.
Oh, my God.
All right. Edge and Christian really continue to break out of their shell and again, continue to be very entertaining. And this is before the show, they had actually kicked off another little treat that they give us fans. Well, on one episode of Raw, they didn't come down through the crowd like they normally had. They came just down the aisle. And they came out and they said, you know, it's too much for us now to come through the crowd. We're champions. We can't be out there with the masses. So, to give everyone a chance to have their moment of glory and be up close and personal, then now we're going to grant us 5 seconds pose for the benefit of those with flash photography. So they usually tailor it to the city. They were in Cleveland one time. They made fun of the Indians by having like Edge fake a pitch and Christian swung, and then Edge was looking like it was a home run, and that was the pose, and it was good stuff. So here are the three of them. Kurt joins them for the pose. They do a Kentucky Jug Band, and they have like fake big fake teeth and everything else. So you know, it was really well done. I loved the 5 second pose. Like, I thought it was really, really smart. I thought it was a good hook for them, and again, just continuing to break out and impress and really become some of the top personalities. And this union with Kurt Angle is just phenomenal.
Yeah, actually the pose they do next month is one of my favorites, for obvious reasons, but we'll get to that one.
They fit really well together, these three. You know, a lot of it was due to their just kind of nerdy humor. That was what the three of them were known for, very goofy and nerdy and geeky. So I thought that is why the three of them meshed really well, and they played off each other nicely and really put each other over well in the process. So this is really one of the best trios we'll see in a while here.
Don't go changing to try and please me. You never let me down before. Mm-hmm. Don't imagine you're too familiar, and I don't see you anymore.
I figured I'd try to redeem myself by at least giving you a song you actually like, so.
The hell is this shit?
Hey, come on. It wasn't exactly the Tavares or anything. Jesus, come on.
All right, well, I'm glad it took you a half hour to play 30 seconds of Billy Joel.
Yes.
All right, here we go.
I'm like, boy, that really sounded like a parlophone, huh? Good
all
God.
Right. Let's talk about the match here. Let's get down to brass tacks. So,
all right.
This six-man here was a pretty good feud. Edge and Christian and Kurt, again, feuding with Rikishi and Too Cool. We had little... like singles matches leading up to this where all the guys would interchange and face off with each other. And they were clearly positioning Too Cool to be no one contenders while they kind of de-pushed the Hardys and Dudleys into other stuff for right now. So I thought it was a good cycling. You know, they may not be the best team, the most over team Too Cool, but I like, this is where you can really play with the depth of the division. You mix it up a little bit. So you give Too Cool a little push now because they've been pretty hot with the fans. And I thought the match was pretty good. Just under 10 minutes. It was a hot opener to get the crowd going. I was okay with the finish, too. To me, Edge and Christian can eat losses like this, and Rikishi ends up hitting Edge with the Well, Grandmaster Sexy hits the hip hop drop and Rikishi pins him. I'm glad Kurt didn't take the pin. I don't think he needed to, or really shouldn't have here. So I was fine with Edge or Christian eating the pin. I'm glad it was Rikishi as well and not one of the two cool guys. So, because Rikishi still booked very strongly as well. So what did you think of this as an opener?
Oh, it's tremendous. And I agree with you completely about the whole the tag division situation, because we're talking about a myriad of teams, and I think WrestleMania pretty much gave the Dudleys and the Hardys the bulletproof vest. They were both crazy over, so you know, give them something else to do, and we'll talk more about them later on in the show. You know, and Edge and Christian didn't have to defend the belts on this night. You know, they got themselves involved in something else. Match is solid, just under 10 minutes. And I from a character perspective, I don't think you could have put Kurt with anybody else better at this moment. They both were, you know, again, all three of them are pretty goofy and nerdy. And, you know, the sense of humor and their being able to show themselves was gigantic, you know.
Would you rather have seen about, or would you rather have seen title matches here? Like, would you rather have seen a tag title match? You're okay with the six man?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, no. We got the main event is just so weighed down. No, not weighed down. How do I word this? The main event, you needed to be a little more economical and with your undercard, because you didn't have as much time on as you would have on a normal pay per view. So it was better to forego a tag title match and have Rikishi and Kurt, two over guys in the company, involved in the match as well. So you needed to be economical in your time management with this pay-per-view, because you didn't have as much time for the undercard as you normally would, because, you know, a good, if you include intros, a good half hour that would normally be left for the undercard got taken away from it to be put in the main event. So you needed to be a little economical with your undercard, which they didn't really do at WrestleMania 12, the last time we had this scenario.
Right.
So they did a good job with this. Kurt and Rikishi are so over and so important to the roster right now, you couldn't not put them on. So foregoing a title is fine with me. There are a boatload of title matches at Backlash. So to forego a couple for the sake of having characters and people, you know, wrestlers people love is a bigger deal. So I had no problem with it. Fit like a glove. You had no problem with Kurt and Edge and Christian losing?
No, a hot opener. And is Rikishi and Too Cool, they aren't scrubs. I mean, I didn't like them going over. I didn't like Too Cool and China going over the Radicals, or I didn't like the six man going over the Radicals either in their debut. But I mean, I don't think it hurts Edge to lose here, and they're still champions, and Kurt is Kurt, so it's fine. I mean, it was the position of the card. It was a good spot for the faces to go over, do the dance after the match, and get things fired up. And you position Too Cool now as top contenders for the title, so I was cool with it.
Yeah. So there you go. Rikishi and Too Cool get the win in the six-man tag. Very, very good match. And kind of positions Too Cool as at the moment, your number one contenders.
Did you think... what did you think they were heading with Kurt next after this? Did you see him... I mean, did you think it was obvious where he was heading the next month?
Yeah. I don't think anybody else could have... I would say it was like 70-30, because about 30% of me thought, well, does he even need it now? I think it's almost like he, you know, it's almost like he doesn't need it now because he's so over. So, but a good 70% of me thought, it's probably still a good spot for him to take. But we'll obviously get more into that. We'll probably get more into that, obviously, next month. But, pretty much a lot of my thinking was where he was going to go. But some of me thought maybe not, because he was already over, and there's so many other guys that might even have needed it more, but we'll talk about that next week. Our second match is a title match, our first of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation European title on the line. Your champion, Mr. Eddie Guerrero, who of course won the title the previous month, taking on his fellow radical buddies, Dean Malenko, your World Wrestling Federation light heavyweight champion, looking for two belts. How about that, huh? Dean being very very aggressive, very opportunistic. And, of course, Perry Saturn. Triple threat match. What did you think of them already? I mean, they've already been here a few months, and already they're kind of battling each other. Did that bother you?
Well, no, because the storyline heading in was pretty clear. I mean, they were just having a little bit of infighting. But also the storyline was, hey, you know what? We all came in together. We got here. We got our contracts. We got paid. now we're on to our own thing. Like, we accomplished what we needed to accomplish as a unit, and now we're looking out for ourselves. I think Lawler actually put that over pretty well in commentary, that was what they were, their goal was. So it wasn't made like, oh, these guys are all split up now, they hate each other. They were just kind of a competitive thing, and they actually had a match, number one contender match between Saturn and Dean, and then Eddie and China interfered. It ended up being like a double DQ or double count out or something, so they ended up both getting the title shot. Leading up to this, Eddie had given China flowers, which she had used a couple of occasions as a weapon, and it was kind of suspicious that this bouquet of flowers is knocking people out, and here we reveal that there was a lead pipe inside the flowers. So,
yeah, it was a lead pipe, yep.
This match is okay. It was a little bit disappointing from what I was hoping for. It only goes about 8 minutes, and I thought these guys would have much better chemistry, the three of these guys, based on their history together, but it ends up being just a little bit choppy. I almost wonder if they would have been better off just doing Eddie and Dean here. I mean, Saturn was clearly the third wheel anyway, and he was okay in the ring, but I think Eddie and Dean, given 8 or 9 minutes here, really could have made this paper even better.
Yeah, I mean, considering the history they have together, yeah. I mean, they had those incredible matches in ECW. I think it was almost like they were kind of throwing Perry a bone. I think at this point they should have started realizing, you know, Perry's probably better off with a tag partner. Let's see if John Cronus is not at the Sizzler right now and see if he can get on a treadmill.
Even if not Cronus, that'd be someone bopping around that they could have stuck.
Yeah, it had to been some, you know,
maybe
guy.
D-Lo. That might have been a bad team.
Yeah, somebody that could have hooked up with him and maybe kind of restarted their own eliminators or something, because it was evident that he was many steps behind the other three.
Yeah.
So this is almost like a, I don't want to say a pity booking, but yeah, I guess it kind of
is. No, he's still being positioned stronger than that. I don't think it's a pity booking.
No, yeah.
I just think they're trying to tell the radical story, but I just feel like it would have been better one-on-one. I don't think it's anything where they felt bad for the guy. Or anything.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either.
I think it's an asinine take.
Thank you.
What did you think of Eddie's... did you like the shtick, like the whole really over-dramatized Mexican accent and all that stuff? Like, did you think that was just... like, because he never had it before, you know, and then all of a sudden he comes out of nowhere and he's like really, really Mexicaned up, you know? It's like ridiculous.
Mexicaned,
you know?
up.
Yeah, he's mexed up. He's like, hey, it's me! You know, it's like way over the top at this point.
It sounds like Deontay 3 years ago. Look, I mean, it's Vince, it's the Vince thing. It's the WWF thing. It's take something that worked in another company and amp it up to the 5 millionth degree. Because it's them. So, I mean, he had the LWO in WCW. So, I mean, it's not the first time that he's enhanced his Latin. I told you agreed with me. I think it doesn't surprise me, but I don't think it really bothered me. I mean, I thought it added a little. I mean, look, Eddie is a great character. He has a great sense of humor. He can pull anything off.
Mm-hmm. I thought it came a little bit out of nowhere and was a little bit laid on too thick. Like, I don't think he needed to go full on fucking 100%. Cheech, you know?
Hey, bro.
It was a little bit much.
I mean, he gets... These next 2 years are a weird time for Eddie, because obviously he still has some other issues. And it's not really until, like, probably late 02, early 03, where he finally really gets the respect from the company that he deserves. But
will you stop?
Sorry, Mr. President. So I think it... It was funny. I mean, it didn't offend. Obviously, it doesn't offend me. It doesn't take much. It takes a lot to offend me. But, I mean, I think they might have gone a little overboard on it. But, you know, the GED thing and, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, I thought it was just as much helping out China, because really they had lost stuff for her to do after kind of kicking away from Jericho. But they might have gone a little too thick. But, I mean, it's neither here nor there. I think they were just taking advantage of Eddie's ability to be funny. Might have been a Kresge thing, but I know it wasn't that big a deal. I was fine with it. As long as he kept looking good in the ring. You know, he recovered from the elbow injury, that nasty elbow injury, and he's been good in the ring, and this was a good match. Was it a great match? No, I agree with you. I think Perry was kind of an albatross, if you look back to the three awesome matches. Now, mind you, that was 5 years earlier. They're 5 years older and
right.
They've gone through, you know, injuries and that kind of thing in WCW, so... you know, they're not going to exactly see the way they looked back in 95 in ECW, but they still probably would have put on a really solid match between the two of them. I don't think Perry dragged down that much, but obviously it would have been better if it was just the two of them.
It's not that it was just Perry. I mean, you really got to get it out for this guy, huh? It's not like it's just him. I'm saying more the fact that triple threats just don't often work unless you have the perfect mix of guys and proper time to tell the story. So I guess my point is in this 8-minute span, I think even Eddie Saturn would have been better. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't like the three-man dynamic here. So that's why I just picked Dean, because I thought it would have been a better match. I mean, I don't hate Saturn as much as you do.
Damn him. Because I was upset at the time because I really wished they had found somebody and put him back in a tag team. He was one of my the Eliminators are one of my favorite tag teams in ECW. Probably my favorite tag team in ECW, number one. And I didn't like much of his stuff in WCW, and I really was kind of upset that, I mean, it's not his fault, but I was, you know, I was like, they're not really doing what they need to do for this guy to make him an asset to the roster. They would eventually find something to do, which would cause a lot of vitriol among fans and maybe a chuckle here and there, but I was just really upset that he should have had an opportunity to shine in what he does best, which is the power guy in a tag team. And he didn't have
it. Oh, it's live, Al.
So Eddie Guerrero retains his World Wrestling Federation European Championship in a triple threat against Dino and Perry. We have a kind of a ongoing storyline behind the scenes throughout this evening,
mm-hmm.
and that is involving the World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Championship. Why don't, JR, you give us the background on what was going on here with the hardcore title and the 24/7 rule?
Well, on an episode of SmackDown, Gerald Briscoe snuck in on Crash Holly while he was sleeping in a room hidden deep in the arena. It was a pretty funny little scene. He tiptoes in, and Mike Chioda's with him, and he counts really slowly, and they're cheering quietly, and then Chioda trips and hits a chair, and Crash wakes up, and Briscoe scampers off. But Briscoe, still champion here, and now he hated it because he's just being super paranoid because everywhere he goes, he's getting jumped. And here, the Fakjim sends him for coffee, and he's kind of hiding and looking for coffee slowly, and then the headbangers jump him. The headbangers had jumped him earlier in the night, and now he's hiding in a bathroom, and he sees himself in the mirror and gets all freaked out, and he's just, like, way over the top crazed about being jumped everywhere he goes.
I enjoyed that. It was actually pretty good.
Did you like the angle with him and Patterson getting more kind of in-ring time? Because it gets a little bit crazy next month.
Well, the next month they went too far. But I didn't mind. It added a little levity to the product. I feel like, because I had thought a lot about when obviously first watching all this stuff, I felt that a lot of the comedy and a lot of the lighthearted stuff left the creative aspect of things when Stone Cold left in November. I felt like it was 2000 was very serious. A lot of serious storylines, and I felt it lost a little levity. Now, mind you, a year earlier, I thought there was too much levity, so there was no balance. But I think I think this was just good to keep the shows a little lighthearted. You know, the main event situation was very serious, and you had mid-card stuff with Benoit and Jericho, very serious. So you needed a little levity to kind of fill in the cracks. And so I had no problem with it. I mean, again, they take it, you know, WWF has been notorious for this, and they still do it now, you know, 12 and a half years later, if a little something works, they think a lot of something works.
Yeah, and exactly. We saw it with Mae Young and Moolah, and now we're seeing it again with Patterson and Briscoe.
Yeah,
and,
a little bit is funny, a lot is embarrassing, and we'll get more into that next week in our next vault.
I'm fine with them using the hardcore title for that. To me, that's a salvageable title to throw around.
Yeah, exactly.
I just think maybe it was just a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
That they do. So maybe Briscoe could add a quicker reign, but the stuff here is pretty funny.
Yeah, it is funny. All right. Next up, we have a match that involves pretty much a brand new feud, JR, that stems from April at the Pond. Tell us a little about the backstory for these two gentlemen.
Well, following his embarrassing performance at WrestleMania and his bizarre antics in the ensuing weeks, Shane McMahon began berating the now friendly comedic giant known as The Big Show. He said he was weak and distracted, and he called him a big lazy piece of shit, basically, and said he should be embarrassed of himself. And Show actually started to cry after Shane ripped into him. And Shane tried to get him to convince him to regain his killer instinct, and they actually reunited. So Shane said he'd help him. And then that lasted about a week before GTV appeared and revealed Shane was mocking Big Show with the rest of the faction. The Fakjim landing is now infamous. Which way did he go? That Shane total shit running into the ground. Shane ran the ground.
Yeah.
Show was pissed and now is focused on kicking Shane's ass. On the earlier in the night here, the pay-per-view actually opened with the Fakjim all in the back talking about the rest of the show, and Vince announces that this is going to be no holds barred, false count anywhere. So it looks like the deck may be a little stacked against Big Show, or maybe not. Maybe Shane's the one in for some trouble with this kind of stipulation. But did you like this quick reversal again of Show's character?
Well, I was getting kind of settled into the kind of happy-go-lucky character.
Yeah, but did you think that they could have kept that going? Like, how many more people could he spoof?
I mean, well,
he was on a roll doing a ton. Like, it was, but he had done everything. Austin Powers, he had done Rikishi. You know, at some point, you kind of run out of...
Yeah, but it doesn't mean you still can't be happy-go-lucky. The impersonations were probably running out, but then he went back to being Nasty Big Show, except babyface Nasty Big Show instead of heel Nasty Big Show, which, as we've talked about, was he ever really a heel anyway?
Right.
You know?
And it's almost like he does the same thing again here. He goes back with Shane for a couple weeks, and then he's back to just being a, back away from him. But I thought he was funny. I enjoyed him on Saturday Night Live, and I enjoyed some of the spoofs he did.
Mm.
But I feel like that's never a good role for a guy like him. You know? I feel like a monster like him should be booked strong and not as a comedy guy. And I thought it was fine for them to break it out and show the personality over, but I was kind of okay with him going back to being this pissed off guy. Still using the aggression version of his theme, by the way.
Right. Yes. At least they kept him a babyface. At least they attempted the nasty bastard babyface Big Show.
Right.
The match was not bad. I don't think they went all out. We have plenty of run-ins, but technically they're not run-ins because if it's false count anywhere, no DQ.
Yeah, you can't go too crazy on the undercard here. You still got some big matches to come, including a crazy overbooked main event. So you can't go too haywire.
Right. We don't have a Shane, usual Shane bump.
Right, which is fine. We don't need it
right
now.
Well, he didn't even actually have that reputation just yet. I mean, he had the one bump at SummerSlam the year before, so that rep hadn't really been established yet. So it's not like, oh, man, no big bump. Well, you didn't know about it yet.
Right.
But,
well, he had done, the SummerSlam one.
The SummerSlam one, but that was it. I mean, the following year, things changed, but we'll get there.
Yeah, so he, actually later this year, too. The run-ins made sense because TNA and Trish had actually been helping him a lot on TV, and Boss Man and Bull had a little bit too. But Trish and TNA had really been kind of Shane's running buddies over the weeks, helping them, fend off Big Show. So it made sense that they got involved here. It really wasn't a surprise. And I actually thought it made TNA continue their push and make them look strong, having them involved with the Boss here and have them help Shane beat Big Show. So what happens is they drag him over near the entranceway, and they actually push like a giant, it was like a speaker or something, right? On top of Show's leg. They trapped him.
Yeah.
And then Shane grabbed the cinder block and busted it over Show's head and then pinned him. So I liked the finish because, you allowed Show to lose, which you wanted to do. You wanted Shane to go over, but he doesn't look weak in doing so. It took five guys to beat him. They had to pin him under a speaker and bash him with a cinder block. So it still keeps him looking tough.
I'm sorry, I got a Fisher point.
No, that was pretty much it.
Okay, I disagree slightly with you. Why did Shane need to win this match? That's the one thing that the match itself is fine, but why did he need to win? What does it help him? I think if anything, you need to strengthen Big Show up again after his performance at WrestleMania. And yeah, he did beat Kurt at Backlash, but I think Show needed a big win as in this new nasty face role to enhance it. So I just disagree slightly with at least you're thinking about Shane. I don't think he needed to win this match. I don't get why he needed to. I think Big Show needed it more.
Well, do they want to give Big Show some time off a little bit?
Well, was he on the shit list already? Was that already thought of?
No, that's a little bit later because he's booked for a big SummerSlam match. But I feel like he's not really around after the show for a few weeks because they still
maybe
some.
All right. Well, if something was going on, then that's fine. I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. But if this was just for booking purposes, I don't get it.
I think they were trying to put over that they were pricks, that they were, they had everyone in their pocket, they could do whatever they wanted, and I thought it was just building heat for maybe Show for a bigger run or turn or something.
Maybe.
So I thought.
Maybe. I don't know. I thought Show still needed.
Show's past the point. Yeah, Show's gone until July.
All right, so something must be up already. All right, if that's the case, then it doesn't really matter.
It looks like they wanted to take him off maybe. Well, I know they wanted him to get in shape and fix himself up, and then he leaves in August, and that's when they sent him to the fat farm and all that other stuff. But so maybe here they were giving him some time to rest up and see if he'd get himself into shape or something. But he definitely takes some time off, and so it makes sense to me. I think it's perfectly good booking to have Shane in the fact team injure him, take him out, and send him to the sideline and with the plan of maybe him coming back and looking for revenge.
Yeah, if he was going off camera, then yeah, it makes sense. But if this,
wasn't a legit off camera, even if it was just part of the story for him to come back, I think it's a good story for him to come back and
but
get
if
revenge.
He was,
I mean, to me,
but if it was just a straight booking thing, then
your face is a straight booking thing.
What are you, 10? So there you go. Shane gets the win.
You know, one other guy he actually also mimicked was the Berserker. He was Shonan the Barbarian.
Yes. That was pretty fun. With that bad paper mache cinder block. So bad. So Shane gets the win. Makes Tess look bad, like badass.
Yeah.
As well. And I know that's even more enhanced next year, the following year, too. More antics with our hardcore champion as Gerald Briscoe tries to hide in the officials or the referee's locker room so no one tries to take his title. And even the refs try and take it from him. It's ridiculous. Can't take it. He's cracking up. Cracking up, I tell you. More on that. Next match, JR. We continue our run of title matches.
Mm-hmm.
Second of the evening. So we do fit a few. We do fit a couple in.
Yeah, that's why I think you're right. We didn't really need those other ones.
We didn't really. It was much better to have Kurt and Rikishi there because fans like them than a tag title match. The World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental title on the line. Your champion, still the Crippler.
Well,
Chris Benoit.
Well, got announced the match. We'll talk about a little dippity doo-dah that they did.
A dippity doo-dah?
Dippity doo-dah, zippity A, my friend.
Yes. What was it?
Well, why don't you say his opponent, and then we'll talk about it.
Okay. Well, his opponent continues to be, as the feud continues, the battle of as a future PTB interview guest Scott Keith called them, the Canadian Chris's, Chris Benoit, Chris Jericho. Mm-hmm. Of course, they were in the triple threat at WrestleMania, and then, of course, faced each other at Backlash, that weird ending. A rematch here, except with a stip, a perfectly awesome one for the two of them, a submission match. Now, Benoit's the champion now, and Benoit was the champion at Backlash, but it wasn't point A to point B, JR, was it?
No, on the May 2nd, it was taped May 2nd, aired May 4th, SmackDown, Chris Jericho actually defeated Chris Benoit to win the Intercontinental title.
That's not a surprise, actually.
On May 8th, episode of Raw, the next week, Benoit got his revenge, but Jericho got fucked with throughout the night. He was put into a series of matches by the McMahons, and it seemed like the reason for him actually being featured so heavily on that show is because The Rock was actually off filming a movie, which we'll get to later. So Jericho got the shine on that show. He was on three different matches, and he was the scorn of the McMahon family. And this is when he started really taunting Stephanie with the trash bag hoe and all that other stuff. And at the end of the gauntlet, his third match of the night, Chris Benoit regained the title against Jericho for his second IC title reign. So back around the waist of Benoit, but Jericho did have another reign squeezed in between this.
Yes. And perfectly fine, because this was one of these ready-made feuds when they got here that, like, if you don't do this, you're fucking stupid. It's like, these are two guys that perfectly belong together in the ring and should be there to beat the snot out of each other. And obviously, they probably had a match or two in WCW. So, 14 minutes, or a little under 13 and a half minutes. Just make your opponent submit. Perfect for both guys. Awesome. They both trained in the dungeon. They wrestled in Japan a couple times. Obviously, wrestled in WCW. So, obviously, they have things like they chop each other like crazy.
You've got to be kidding me.
Nah, beat the crap out of each other. And a great move at the end. Jericho has on the walls of Jericho. I still like calling it the Lion Tamer, but for submission. Benoit then whacks him with his knee brace. He actually takes the brace off and cracks him with it, and then slaps on the old Crippler crossface. Twice Jericho battles out of it, actually.
Right.
You don't see that very often. But the third time, this is incredible. And again, I mean, look, we know the whole scenario.
Yeah,
we talked about it. But he slides it, his arms under his chin and starts choking him.
Yeah.
And Jericho's choked out. He doesn't tap out. He's just out.
Yeah. I want to focus on Jericho here off of this because I thought it made him look really strong.
Yes.
He doesn't tap. He passes out, and after the shit the McMahons have put him through, his push is a little bit stronger than I think a lot of people remember around this time. I think a lot of fans thought he got screwed out of that title on that Raw, and then he just got buried for a while. But no, he was still pushed pretty strong. To still be involved in the feud with the McMahons and the regime was a pretty big deal, and he was obviously becoming put up there as a high-level face. So I thought it was good to see. From him, and it was also good to see Benoit be ruthless and win the title back here. I really like this match. It's up there with last month as well, and this war has really been great between these two guys, beating the crap out of each other. Did you think – were you glad to see the title of Benoit over Jericho?
Yeah, because heel face, Benoit, the badass with the gold, Jericho, the heroic, very popular baby face, get with the carrot dangling in front of him. I think the roles were perfect. No problem with Benoit continuously retaining in his own sadistic way. It worked perfectly. Like I said, this was a ready-made feud that you'd be dumb not to book. It immediately just made this mid-card incredible and has made this show great. Fantastic match. And the one thing I gotta say about these two, and they really enhance it as they continue with this feud throughout the rest of this year and into early next year. When you're having a feud with two guys, when two guys are having a feud and you know that they're going to be out multiple matches over multiple months, it is very hard when you're limited in your work rate and ability to be very creative in making matches different. We've heard interviews, JR, for years about guys, you know, house shows back in the Federation years. You know, you're wrestling the same guy for four straight weeks. You know, it's kind of hard to switch them up. But when you're different towns, it doesn't matter because it's different crowds. But in a situation like this, when you're dealing with two incredibly talented guys with extensive move sets, every match felt different. Now, the stipulations didn't hurt, but definitely for me, the fact that they were so different with every match is a testament to them, in my opinion. Now, we've seen feuds go, you know, one or two pay-per-views. Mick and Triple H obviously had two totally different matches, but they also were only wrestling twice. These guys will continue on for quite a while, off and on camera, or on pay-per-view and TV, I should say. And it's a testament to just how incredibly talented these two guys were that they were able to make every match different, and they continue on with it throughout the year and into early next year. These two matches, Backlash and this, totally different matches. So a testament to both of these guys and to the roles they played in it to make it so great. So to answer your question, no change here. Benoit's in the right spot, Jericho's in the right spot, and the belt's on the right guy. So,
any regret on Benoit's part for jumping?
No. No. Yeah, he'd have been WCW champion, but who would have given a fuck at this point?
Yeah.
Who cares? Who cares?
Wouldn't matter.
The IC title here has more weight than the fucking world title, and this is not a knock on Jarrett or Booker, and I mean, they did what they could with what they had, but he did the right thing. Yeah, he's not main event yet, but he's making more money, more high-profile feuds, and certainly better opponents.
Yeah, I think you're dead on with the whole IC title's better than WCW, because this is when David Arquette was champion.
So, yeah, exactly.
So, yep. I think it's pretty obvious that, yes, the IC title does definitely carries more prestige and weight at this point, even though just a year before, Godfather was winning the title, but digress from there.
So there you go. Chris Benoit retains the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship by choking out Jericho. What great booking. Damn it, what great booking.
Yeah.
Just to make him just a son of a bitch.
Yep.
Awesome. And Jericho was a perfect foil for it because he was so beloved by all parts of the collective. So,
just a little update, Scott, when we were talking about before.
Yes.
Now there's a rumor or story out there that A-Rod's people negotiating with baseball, maybe to just do a lengthy suspension instead of a ban, which to me was not as good because that's the worst of both worlds. Well, I guess the Yankees would still get paid, not have to pay while he's suspended, but I just want him off the books completely. I mean, what the hell good is he going to be, you know, if he's out for a year and a half? I mean, a lengthy suspension is going to be probably this year and all the next year would be my guess.
Right.
How's he going to be do after 2 years off, you know? So hopefully hopefully they keep the ban.
Yeah. Curious to see how the, you know, what Major League Baseball will do. I mean, not that the Yankees were ever, are ever a victim of anything. It doesn't happen too often, but, you know.
Hmm.
I don't know if Major League Baseball will let them get bailed out because they did, you know, offer the deal. So, but we'll see. All right. Next, we have another battle of past versus present, and another great gimmick with another great team, maybe two great teams. The Dudley Boys, who we talked about earlier.
Tonight, because I'm bizarre.
What do you think made him say that?
Still, probably drugs. Lots and lots of drugs.
Yeah, it's true. Because I'm bizarre.
I'm bizarre.
How bizarre.
Let's start again.
Oh, God. Terrible song. Oh, God. I didn't do that. All right. By the way, before we do that, Michael Cole interviewed. Fucking guy. God, I hated that video. When I was working at radio, the overnight jock broke the CD on purpose. Said, oh, we're having technical difficulties, and they ended up playing Freebird instead. It's pretty funny. Before we get to the match. Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Put down the nachos. The continuing saga of our hardcore champion, JR, Michael Cole, is interviewing Gerald Briscoe until the concession guys look to sneak up on them. The popcorn guy. Chicken Steak LaRue tried to jump him. Amazing. Now, back to the Dudleys. Who, of course, as we said, kind of got put in another position while Too Cool was kind of passed him, but just kind of replaced him in the tag team pecking order at the moment. Dudley's now taking on. They're in their feud with the extension of the Faction, and that is Road Dogg and X-Pac. X-Pac!
And I have half the brain that you do!
I like that cadence you used. X-Pac!
X-Pac! X-Pac! And Road Dogg, the D-O-double-G. Were you still into these guys at this point still? As a team?
Why was I ever into them?
Well, I'm saying you kind of enjoyed them. You had mentioned the
refreshing up a little bit. Yeah, I was okay with them. I know at the time there's a lot of hand-wringing with these guys. A lot of...
That's funny. Did I ever like them?
I remember there was definitely a lot of hand-wringing at the time that they were pissed off that these guys were getting wins and still being pushed as a team, and it definitely felt very political, but I think it was a little bit of blending of storyline and reality within some fans' heads at this point with this stuff. Like,
right.
A lot of, you know, all the stuff where Helmsley and these guys are in power in the storyline made it feel like, okay, they were really running the show backstage, and they might have been a little bit, but... I don't think a lot of people were happy that X-Pac and Road Dogg were kind of getting this level of push, which is surprising to me, because we're not that far removed from X-Pac being, you know, one of the hottest guys on the roster. So I didn't think it was that crazy that he would still get this push, and Road Dogg too. I don't think they were, like, so dead in the water. I didn't think they should be showcased. I didn't like when the Outlaws are champions, but I'm not saying they should be cut or not used in storylines. I thought they still had good heat and still worked well within the Faction. I don't know. I was fine with them as a team and a unit and even getting wins here and there as long as they showed ass in the end, but...
Right.
I didn't think we're that far removed from them being hot acts. I don't know why all of a sudden. I mean, they're obviously overshadowed by some of the teams that have come in, but I didn't think that meant they should just deserve to be buried or forgotten.
Right. No, I don't think so either. And you know what? They were needed to kind of help enhance these guys. And I don't know, win here, win there. Who cares? Gaz. Particularly the Dudleys. Like I said, they were handed the bulletproof vest at WrestleMania. Now. It was good that they used this gimmick because it just makes them. In fact, it as much as Road Dogg and X-Pac did win, you know, this is still there. The Dudley Boys gimmick, the double tables. Maybe that's why I think people were a little irritated. It's one thing to win a match. It's another thing to beat them at their own game.
Yeah, but it's a bullshit. It's a bullshit step. You know what
it is a bullshit step.
It's a bullshit one, meaning that it doesn't give you a clean win. I think this is easier than... I think it looks better than pinning them clean.
Yeah, it does. That's what I'm saying. It's, you know, regardless of that, it's not a big deal. I think people were getting a little overboard on it.
Well, the feud kicked off on 5-8 when the Dudleys are facing Test Albert and Gerald Briscoe in a tables match. The Dudleys prevailed, but at the end, DX ran in. Road Dogg and Icebox laid Bubba on the table, and Briscoe actually dove off and splashed him through the table. So Briscoe heavily involved in the Fact Gene storylines. I mean, this is the peak of Vince and these guys, the whole Fact Gene. This is,
oh my God,
May was like their month. Yeah. They were just everywhere. And this is when Vince was giving us really, you know, every show would have a 20-minute promo with the whole faction. And, you know, the infamous one of Vince with the life sucks and then you die and all that. Remember that was on SmackDown
sucks,
during this time.
And then you died.
Yeah, that was his big one about how people are losers and all that stuff. So, but they were just dominating every, and that was probably part of the whole thing too with Road Dogg and X-Pac. Maybe people was tired of the whole faction just dominating television. But I thought it was a well-built, strong heel faction. And I thought it provided good opposition for Rock and Jericho and these guys to feud with. And I thought I elevated guys. So I elevated Jericho in this feud. I thought I elevated the Dudleys a little bit in this feud. And there were other guys that benefited from it.
Right.
Rikishi and Too Cool.
Yeah. That was the whole point. You know, heel faction. Babyface is up and coming. That's how it works.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm kind of disappointed it doesn't run longer, honestly. I thought they aborted the giant faction a little bit too quickly. But, I mean, it fits a pretty fitting ending. Meets a fitting ending at our next pay-per-view, but I thought it was really, really strong that they could have maybe kept it going a little bit longer even. But yeah, so the DX actually wins here. The whole thing was the Dudleys are trying to get their hands on Torrey. Torrey actually put Bubba through the table as well on 5-18. So they were trying to get their hands on her, and she escapes here. Briscoe gets involved again and helps DX win. They end up putting it ends when X-Pac puts Bubba through a table. Road Dogg got the first table fall when he put D-Von, and then Bubba put X-Pac through it. And then X-Pac comes back against Bubba after Briscoe gets involved. So eventually they're going to get their hands on Torrey, give her some wood. But right here, she's still evading them, and DX gets the win. So I was fine again with this finish because you could tell they were building the story.
Yeah, I mean, the match itself doesn't – it's all right. You know, a little over 12 minutes. Nothing.
Dudley's quickly putting a lot of guys over, though, after the little hot run in February and March. Put over TNA, and now they're putting over DX here.
Do you think it was a – we talked about this briefly a few times here and there over the start of the calendar year anyway. Do you feel that this was another test based on the Public Enemy debacle?
No.
To see if these guys...
No, I think that shit's long gone. I mean, they've been here almost a year now at this point.
Right, but I'm saying,
months.
All right, well, now they had their run. Let's see how they feel having to get shunted down a little bit. Okay.
No, I think it's... I mean, they were slowly pushed. No, I think they were so over they were using them to put over heel teams.
Yeah.
They were using
I think
to
so
get
too.
TNA over, and then this was just a feud. So, no, right. I don't think it has anything to do with that, I think.
Okay.
I think it's reading too deep into the tea leaves.
The tea leaves.
Your face is too deep in the weeds, motherfucker.
X-Pac, two tea leaves? Two tea leaves in a bucket? All right. We're going to take a break. So, does the undercard live up to its hype?
Yes.
I think so, too. Yep. Not every match has to be 5 stars to be a great, fun undercard match.
No, yeah, it's a solid, like you said, all very spaced out. Nothing longer than 13 minutes, nothing shorter than 8. Everything's right in that wheel sweet spot of 8 to 15-ish.
Yep.
Everything spaced out nicely. All feuds heading in. Everything had a little bit of heat behind it. No standout matches, so I think it prevents it from maybe being like one of the best pay-per-views of all time. But storyline-wise, build-wise, and just... quality match wise, to me, it definitely is up there. It's a very good show. So we'll see if the main event can solidify that or if it hurts it.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about the main event momentarily, but we're going to take a break, reset, and be back for 60 wonderful minutes. Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now!
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF? I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones.
Ooh. The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance. I'm Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harvard Chat are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also our good friend Graham Cawthon, History of WWE.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, TWFnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation. Many blogs, podcasts, vodcasts, yours could be included. They're the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at TWFnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. Not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
Hey, this is Ed Banger Thrasher, and you're listening to what the fuck is it? The Place to Be podcast, so you better not miss it, because I'm on it.
All right, Nation, we are back here chatting a little bit of Judgment Day 2000. We've got one match left. Let's just take a moment, Scott. PlaceToBeNation.com, the hottest website on the web today.
Hell yeah.
You can read everything and anything you want to read about wrestling, sports, pop culture. You name it, we got it. Really cool thing today, Chad Lee Campbell. Mm-hmm. If you remember our podcast from last week when you were here in the Man Cave, we did a television show draft, wrestling programming. Chad went all Mel Kiper on us. He actually did a full write-up. He went pick by pick, analyzed them, and then granted a winner. We also have the poll up that you can vote in as well, so you decide whose programming you would choose. I know who Chad picked. Man.
Yes, he did.
Parv did,
by
too.
By only a third of a grade.
Parv did, too. Well, I think he just didn't want you to feel too bad, you know.
Oh, come on. But I've already said
we know what you said.
I already said that I thoroughly defend my Thunder pick. I have no problem.
I want to go back and listen to the tape, because I'm pretty sure you can tell that you didn't say that right away. That was like after 3 minutes of me mocking you, that little gem snuck out. So I don't think so. I don't buy it. I'm sorry.
Well, who cares? The pick's made.
I'm going to give you a lifetime ban from the podcast for not only lying, but also obstructing justice. First you cheated. You took Thunder. All right.
I cheated by taking Thunder.
You cheated yourself and your fans. Desert Island Pop Culture Tournament Round 2 reminder is up today. But you can go in. All the Round 2 matchups are up. Round 3 will commence next week. So please go and get voting in there. Andrew Duvall with the 1,000 films you need to see. Entry number 3, Dog Day Afternoon, was up today. Also, need to give a lot of love. Total Divas watching Total Divas, week one. Ben Morse, Jen Engel, did a little email exchange back and forth reviewing the first episode of Total Divas. Really, really good stuff if you haven't read it. Even if you think the show is a joke or you hate it, their take on it's pretty interesting. So check it out. Very enthusiastic. Weber Has Issues is up. Parv and Doctor Who. Kyle Warren makes his Ring of Honor debut. Reviewed the June 27th edition. And, of course, your Raw and everything else is up there as well. A lot of good stuff coming the rest of the week as well from all of our usuals. We have the Hard Traveling Fanboys will be back tomorrow. We have Return of the Hack, like I mentioned. Also, We Missed the 90s makes its return this Friday.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me and Jen Engel's up as well. So a lot of good stuff going on. PlaceToBeNation.com. We're about 3 weeks out from starting our extensive football coverage, both pro and college. Lots of good stuff. All previews of the conferences. NFL, we're going to have previews of all the teams. Yep. We're going to have predictions, and that'll lead right into the season. So if you're interested in writing about any sports, as football in particular, or even hoops as we get close as well, or anything else, we're looking for music specifically too. If you're into it, let me know. Let Scott know. Hit us up at Police TV Nation on Facebook or on Twitter or email, wherever you want. All the staff information is right on the website there as well for you to contact us. So yep. PlaceToBeNation.com. Take it over the nation, baby. Come join us.
A big site.
Yes, big site. Yes, it is a big site.
It is a big site.
I don't know if it's as big as Get the Point Radio, but it's a...
Well, it's all right. They're both pretty big. Just like Thunder's a big show.
Yes.
Great in 2000.
A big show to fuck up your draft.
Hey, I still say, though, that my regret, Chad actually was right. I am.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
It's a Kenny McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan Fuckface Rob Houston Elliptical YMCA update. I heard some jackasses defending Thunder. Is this correct, Scott Criscolo?
Yes.
The worst show ever created, known to man, Thunder?
Yes.
What is it with shit things being named Thunder? Thunder? Thunder of Paradise? Thunder of Lightning?
Hey, ho, wait a minute. Look, you can shit on
Oklahoma Thunder. City Thunder? Mark Claire told me about them. I don't watch basketball. Memphis, Tennessee, May 2nd, 2000. Jim Duggan was in a Battle Royal and he lost. May 18th in Jackson, Mississippi, Jim Duggan defeated Fit Finley. That's it for May. Criscolo, how was your weekend?
I had a pretty good weekend. Pretty good weekend, VKM. How about you? Did you? You're overseas now. Aren't you talking to me from New Zealand or China? How was that trip?
I don't go on those trips, you asshole. I'm sitting in my pool right now, sipping on margaritas.
Did you hear about the fan that jumped in the ring and kicked Randy Orton in the nuts?
Bud Light Limeritas, to be specific. My favorite drink. Criscolo, what do you show you're talking about tonight?
Judgment Day 2000.
Which one's that? Who's on the tape? Who was on the cover of the program that night?
Kane's face is on the tape, if I remember correctly.
Is Kane on the show?
No, he wasn't.
Who came up with that stupid idea then? Fucking Rotella. I gotta stop letting him in charge of the production materials. So what was it? Is this the Iron Man?
This is the Iron Man, yes.
Criscolo, you know, there's a lot of things you can do in an hour.
Really?
Yeah, I can fly overseas and bang Osama bin Laden's fucking living wife. I can call Bobby Heenan on the phone and have a good time. I can wear a White Sox jersey and run around naked around Comiskey Park. I can bang your girlfriend. I can bang Derek Lewis' girlfriend. I can bang Mark Claire's girlfriend. A lot of girlfriends I can bang.
Donna Christianello?
You can. Oh, well, that'll take a couple hours. I got to take the pill. It's going to kick in. And a lot going on with that one.
Any parties this weekend, VKM? Did you invite anybody over?
It's the summer, bitch. Parties all the time.
Ah, who'd you have on this week? We've been looking forward to all day to see who you invited in the VKM Sex Palace.
Well, the usual crew is there. Mark Claire, Matt Rotella. We had Anthony Armento driving, parking the cars as usual. Snorting coke up in the upstairs bathroom, doing cannonballs, almost famous style, into the pool.
That's right.
The fucking one-man gang came. Made a big scene. Oh, he got hammered. Made a big scene.
Wow.
He tried to dive off the diving board. The thing broke. He splashed Jacques Rougeau, almost killed him. Fucking Luke and Butch were grilling. I don't know what the hell they were cooking over there. John Nord was there stomping around. He broke my fucking plasma TV. I bought that thing in 2001. You know how much that shit cost me, Criscolo? He stomped right through it with his furry boots.
That's right.
Fucking Al Snow was there. Clogged up my toilet. It was a fucking disaster this weekend.
Oh, is this here? Oh. I got a phone message for you, VKM. It's from Billy Jack Haynes.
What's the shit?
He says that 10 fucking kilo, jobber five one. Zeros, 10 kilo, 20. Call Moochie.
Yeah, I got a message for Billy Jack Haynes too. Watch your fucking back, motherfucker! I'm gonna come kill you. Fucking, I didn't like when you no sold to Hercules or WrestleMania 3. I had one of the conquistadors over. I didn't know which one. You sleeping in my bed?
You mean they go in the pool with their
Yes, I didn't know which one it was. One or two. Two owes me a lot of money, you know.
You have to vacuum all.
They
the
lie stuff. To me all the time. It could be either one of them. I don't know which one's which.
To vacuum all the glitter out of the pool.
Fucking barbarian was there breaking branches off my tree so we could use them as antlers. It was a fucking disaster. It's another summer weekend in the McMahon home.
Sounds like the post-match party for WrestleMania 7.
I was running through bitches like crazy, Chris Golo.
Oh, really? I've heard.
Fucking made Mike McGurk sit in a cage and watch me. That stupid bitch.
A cage? Did she have her little tuxedo outfit on?
Oh, I make her wear that shit all the time. Silver. I make her announce everyone who comes into the party.
I heard the Duke of Dorchester's your mailman.
Who? Pete Doherty?
Yeah.
He's not alive.
He might be.
Well, you didn't hear that.
It's always a pleasure, VKM.
Always a pleasure, too, here, Chris Golo. Bang bitches all night long. Eat it right. Let's go, Claire. We're out of here.
What do you mean he lost the keys to the cage? How's she going to get out? All right. All right, we'll leave her in there. That's fine. Tell her we got Isaac Yanko going over to check out her teeth. That'll scare the shit out of her. Any nigga I've been with. They ain't hit shit till they suck their tongue in the spine with that front and shit. I got my own Vince. Jovial Vince tonight.
Yeah, he was. He was quite giddy tonight.
Yeah. He's had a good weekend.
I tell you, it was like he was reenacting the... It's not like he was reacting the WrestleMania 7 post-party.
It was, yeah.
Who was left? All you needed was Snooker running around the woods.
Eclectic party, yeah.
Yes. Gotta clean all the conquistador glitter out of the pool. All right. Our main event for the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
Behind the candelabra.
Hunter Spies. Although I'm a little upset. His waist is empty. No belt after what happened at Backlash.
Good thing I was... never mind.
You know what? I threw you a softball there thinking you were going to hit it, and you took it low and outside.
Well, it's a good thing everything else is full. Your waist is empty.
Jesus. All right. So, yes. The game, Triple H, of course, not... The World Wrestling Federation champion, of course, lost the title at Backlash to The Rock, thanks to the one-and-done Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, Triple H challenged The Rock. He had, of course, had his ready-made rematch. He wanted it here, and he wanted to test The Rock's manhood by seeing if he could hang for an hour. He challenged The Rock to an Iron Man match.
Yes.
Our first Iron Man match on pay-per-view in over 4 years.
Yeah, now what did you think heading into
this?
Did you think they stood a chance? This is what I cannot wait to ask Kevin about, by the way.
I didn't know, because we only have one example. And if it was going to be booked like that, they didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. As much as I love both these guys, they're not those guys. So I don't know if from pure work rate, we were going to get the same 60 minutes.
And there was a lot of doubt out there that they could
do this. Oh, a hell of a lot of doubt. Oh, absolutely. Was I excited? Of course I was. But I was skeptical. I'm not going to lie. Because both guys have been on a roll. They had a great second half of match at WrestleMania after Foley and Big Show were eliminated. And then they had an awesome match previous month at Backlash in D.C. So this was really getting out of their wheelhouse and into uncharted waters.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're dealing with, 60 minutes.
Who is calling you over there?
I don't know. It's the same friggin' number.
You hiding the Anne Frank and her family in your fucking attic and they're trying to get over there?
407. What's the area code for 407? Or what's the
fuck
area?
Do I know?
I don't know.
Mute that shit, will you?
Is it Vince?
What fuck kind of hack job is this?
Maybe it's Claire calling on his on his disposable cell phone.
Oh, Jesus.
So
you're supposed to be sitting in a dark room, everything on mute.
Dark room.
I hate fucking Mariners. Like, what a shitty fucking franchise. You can't do anything right. You can't win a game.
Actually, I think Dustin Pedroia might have just busted a car with this home run. But, God sakes. I hope they fucking lose every game for the rest of the year. Losers.
The losers. So, yeah, I think everybody thought, you know what? As awesome as both these guys are, 60 minutes? I don't know. A little shaky. But there would be a variable thrown into the mix that might have sauced it up a little bit. Tell them what that variable is, JR.
We have a special guest referee. The return of the commish, Shawn Michaels.
What?
The 5:15 Raw opened with the return of Shawn Michaels. Has been last seen super kicking The Rock on the opening episode of SmackDown back in August. He had two major announcements. One, he had officially resigned as commissioner. We find out the new one about a month away. He also announced that he'd been appointed by Linda McMahon to be the official referee in the Iron Man match. This was to add some intrigues. No one knew what side Shawn would be on. Remember, last time we saw him, he had screwed The Rock over. But now he pushed Vince down and seemed to be a little bit pro-Rock. Throughout the night here, we saw different vignettes, him talking to The Rock. Rock gave him stern warnings to mind his business. And Triple H talking about his family, and Shawn was in their locker room, and really trying to play up that they didn't know what he was going to do once he got out there. Of course, this is also the infamous Shawn Michaels biker shorts as referee, smuggling bananas.
yes.
Just a real terrible outfit.
Yeah, it's pretty awful. Enough of the fucking bike shorts. Jeez.
Did you like the addition of him here?
Yeah, I did, actually, because at the time, any variable helped, because, again, we were very skeptical. Were you skeptical? Before Shawn?
No, I think I was unsure. I didn't think that they couldn't do it. I don't think it was a lock that they could.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was going to have to be different.
Right.
I was definitely looking forward to it. But I was cool with them adding Shawn here. I thought, I mean, anytime Shawn was involved was fun at this point. But I thought it was good because you could definitely shift some of the story and intrigue off of them to help them carry the load a little bit. So
mm-hmm. I had no problem with it. Because anytime Shawn is involved in anything, that is where you get the essence of the unpredictable. And with Triple H not champion, you thought to yourself, "Oh, here we go." Took care of his boy at on SmackDown previous August. Gonna take care of him again, or won't he? Remember they used to have the little clips throughout the night of them chatting in the locker room, and it was getting back together kind of thing. As the match was going. And we'd only get two pins in the first 25 minutes. I said to myself, I think I know where this is going.
Well, right off the bat with the two pins was already an improvement over WrestleMania 12. Because now,
well, that's true too.
That first 10 minutes, you're like, oh man, I hope they don't do another 1-0 or 2-1. Like, I really was hoping they'd do something a little bit different. So you get that first pin 10 minutes in, Rock wins with the Rock bottom. And now you're starting to think, okay, maybe this is where we're going to get going a little bit. But God, I don't want take your point. Good.
Oh no! You're exactly right, though. No, I want you to back it up if you can, and you did. You were thinking to yourself, "All right, each has hit their finishers in the first 25 minutes. Rock won with a Rock Bottom about 10:43, and then Triple H evened it up with a Pedigree at 25:26.
Yep.
A minute later, Triple H gets a small package, and it's 2-1, a little over 26 minutes in.
Right, which is great, because Rock was still kind of out of it from the pedigree, so Triple H just picks him up, rolls him up, and goes up 2-1, which I thought was brilliant. And this is where the brilliance of the booking really fires up.
Yes.
The story gets great here. So 6 minutes later, Triple H hits a pile driver, goes up 3-1. And I thought the commentary was great here, too. I thought JR and King were awesome in this match. I thought this was one of the best matches they've ever had together as far as putting over strategy in the story. Because I loved how once it was 3-1, they started saying how, Triple H should go on the defensive and really play it safe and don't feed into The Rock and kind of play stay away for the last 28 minutes or so with a 3-1 lead. And anytime Triple H would pick up a near fall, they'd be like, oh, man, Rock needs to stay alive. 4-1 would be insurmountable. And I thought that was just really, really good stuff. Mm-hmm. So then at the 40-minute mark, Rock finally mounts a comeback. It's a DDT to make it 3-2. And then another piece of brilliant booking, Scott. Triple H grabs a chair, bashes Rock with it. Rock wins the fall by DQ, and everyone's like, what the, you know, why the fuck did he do that? It's 3-3. Then he just casually pins him 20 seconds later.
Yeah.
Goes back up 4-3, but now he's done damage to him.
Yes.
2 minutes later, he puts him out with a sleeper, goes up 5-3. So you think once Rock ties it, we're going to stay close, but no, they mix it back up, and now Triple H is up 2 again. So you're like, whoa, what the fuck? So now we got 5 minutes left, still up 2, and you're wondering, I don't know what's going to happen here. So Rock ends up winning by countout to go up 5-4. Triple H gets back in the ring. Rock gets a hot flurry, hits the people's elbow, goes 5-5 with 58 minutes. So now we're tied with 2 minutes remaining. And Scott, who did you honestly think was going to win at this point?
I thought Rock was going to retain.
I did too. I thought this was going to be the end of the feud. I thought for sure Rock was going to retain. Yeah, I did not think they were going to flop the belt back again.
No, I thought they were going to. Rock was going to move on to something else. Triple H is going to move on to something else. Maybe feud. Maybe show. Maybe because remember, we still weren't sure about Shawn's health. We thought maybe this was his comeback. So.
Was the next night. I got a little confused there for a minute. Still epic though. So obviously in this match the same thing happens. The lights go out, the little girls start dancing and singing nursery rhymes.
Mm-hmm.
Out comes this mysterious man on the motorcycle, the return of the Undertaker for the first time since September.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the match everything had really broken loose. All of DX, the faction was out there and everything was going crazy. You could tell they fucked up the timing, though, because Taker takes a little bit to come down to the ring on the bike and do all the shit.
Right.
And they pull the clock off the screen. So to me, you know that that's when it's fucked up already, when they pull the clock off the screen.
Yes.
So Taker comes in, and he's got Triple H up for a tombstone. Shawn sees it, calls for the bell right before his 60 minutes in theory. Triple H gets the fall by DQ. He gets tombstoned. Rock gets in the ring, but the bell rings and the match ends with Triple H winning. The whole thing was very, very confusing. It was awesome. It was great chaos, but the finish ends up getting kind of fucked up because of it. Yep. The way Shawn kind of sees it, but doesn't, calls for the bell. No one knows what's going on. And Taker's comes back. It's awesome. He's beating everyone up. Vince does the epic duck walk where he walks into him. One of the best comedic Vince moments ever.
Yeah.
Just an awesome spin and walk. Yeah, so what did you think of the whole thing? Did you like the Taker gimmick? Did you think it ruined the end of the match? Do you think it added to it? Do you think it was too chaotic to get the point across? What were your thoughts in general?
Well, I was marking out. I remember being at Mike's house, and I was marking out because it was an awesome return. Very surprising. The gimmick didn't sink
in.
Well,
not surprising. You thought it was surprising that he came back here?
Well,
I mean, they had been teasing it, basically.
I was surprised. Yeah, I guess I wasn't surprised. If I think of it that way, yeah. I was surprised, I was surprised at how his return ended the match. Because they were trying to do the same thing they didn't do the same thing 2 months in a row. A run-in
costs right. Triple H. That's what everyone was thinking. The gimmick, it didn't hit me. I didn't think about it for like a couple weeks until I wrapped my head around it. Do I like this real taker guy? Do I like the lack of the dead man? And now he's, you know, now he's just a. I mean, we saw a hint of it when he left in 99 because he kind of walked around with the.
The
black stuff, you know, the black.
And it was rumored for a while that he was coming back with a biker gimmick. I mean, it was hard to envision, hard to believe, and I think hard for a lot of people to accept. But
yeah,
it was coming. It just was. I mean, I guess he was due for a change. We had seen the devil stuff. We had seen the regular taker. I think he deserved to be a little bit something different. Now, we'll talk about his in-ring quality matches as we move along. And the outfit already looked awful. Yeah, that long, big leather coat and the big blue denim shirt and everything else. It looked kind of stupid. But
yeah,
definitely a superstar presence when he comes out here. Definitely a big deal.
I think he was hiding the fact that he was out of shape.
Probably.
I mean, I think that's why he was so
he had been rehabbing a lot of major injuries. So
yeah,
he's definitely dinged up. But he, a great presence. A big deal when he comes out. Just you could tell it was really, really big for him to come out and get involved here and be back to help these faces battle the Facchemes. Like, I thought it was very important for him, for them to add another high-level face to the mix.
Yeah, and he obviously seems like he's moving around better. But, yeah, the timing got thrown off and kind of wrecked
the song?
Ending. Well, I mean, yeah, I did.
Yeah, I thought it fit him well.
Yeah, I think so. And then, and here comes the next 4-year love affair with Kid Rock and eventually Limp, and they have an affinity for about 4 bands: Drowning Pool. And,
yes. I thought this was a good. I thought the song fit well. I thought it was a good choice.
Yeah. But the ending shocked me.
Yeah, I agree.
But it made sense logically.
No, it did.
It made sense logically.
It did. I just was surprised they flopped the belt off Rock. I thought Rock, after all the build to Rock finally winning, because he hadn't had it since Mania 15,
mm-hmm.
all this long, slow build to him regaining the title, and then you take it off him 3 weeks later, really surprised me at the time. To the point where I thought they fucked the ending up.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I assume they fucked it up, honestly. I thought maybe Sean wasn't supposed to do that, or they ran out of time, so they audibled. And I think that was a rumor at the time as well on the
yeah, there was
on
a
the
rumor
net, that they screwed it up and that it wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, that was the Mr. Tito on Lords of Pain. I remember hearing that he thought it was Sean called an audible because the time got fucked up, something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, it was very confusing, and the fact that Rock had just won and then they take it back off him 3 weeks later, and then the way they put it back on him is weird too. We'll talk about it next week. Mm-hmm. So just all around kind of weird. I mean, I'm fine with it, I guess, but I don't know if it was the best idea. I thought this should have been the end of the feud. Rock beats him in the Iron Man and moves on to other things, especially when we look at what comes next month.
Yeah, that's for sure. And there were a lot of guys on the roster that would have been fun to watch, and we get that in a couple of months.
Yeah.
But I was a little perplexed. I mean, I was happy, of course, that you know, Hunter had the belt back. But yeah, the ending did seem a little kind of train wreckish, but... to me, it doesn't take away from one of the greatest
booked
matches ever.
No, it was genius. Just fantastic booking. It wasn't too overbooked. It was just properly overbooked. They did enough. They did enough where they didn't have to hide Rock and Triple H. Like, so no one could say afterwards, well, they overbooked it, so they didn't. I mean, those two, you have to give them credit. They went out there, and for about 57 minutes, they told their own story. I mean, there was no other... Yeah. Nonsense involved. It was really smart, really shrewd. I liked all the falls. I thought that was fine. I liked the intelligence of them with the DQ and the sleeper and the small package. I loved all that stuff. I thought it was really, really well done. And they, I like you said, I thought one of the best main events in company history.
And I'm surprised because I could have sworn it's on something, but I'm looking at our good friend. The Broham Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. And according to this, it's not on any DVDs. I thought it was on at least one.
No, it's never been on one.
That's a travesty.
It's not going to be on
Meanwhile,
the new...
Meanwhile, Brett and Sean is on like 7 DVDs.
I mean, do you think this is the Attitude Era thing? Or what do you think it is?
The blurred logo and all that crap? Maybe.
Well, now that's gone, so...
Yeah. I thought it was on... Sure, it's not on the new It might be on Hunter's DVD, the new one coming out. Maybe. I'll look into that while we're talking. But it's for if you haven't seen it, we saw it. I mean, obviously, we saw it on YouTube. So look for it and watch it if you have an hour to kill. It is a fantastic match. It is the way that an Iron Man match should be booked. Enough with pride. Enough with, oh, I don't want to get pinned. It was perfect the way it was booked. Perfect. And it didn't, and I agree with you 100%, JR, did not hide these two guys. These two guys are not bad wrestlers. It was ridiculous, you know? Sure enough, disc two of Thy Kingdom Come, Iron Man match for the WWE Championship. That's right.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be on that new one, so that's good. It's going to be out there somewhere.
Yes, so it'll be on. It's on disc two, with a match that's on. It'll be on in a few months on pay per view, which we will talk about. All right, so it is on a DVD coming out soon, so you'll enjoy that.
Must see, like you said, and just an awesome pay per view, a tremendous show. Nothing.
No letdowns, really.
No. It was just perfectly booked. Yeah. It really was. It was really good, well booked. And despite our little quibbles about the main events aside, the finish of it, still a great moment. I mean, I watched that Taker moment a million times over and over. Just phenomenal. Yeah. A huge pop. Everyone had been dying for him to come back. We've been teased a couple times. And with all these build up and all these promos leading up to it, a lot of excitement in the air. So. Really, just one of the peak pay-per-views of the hot era, so it's hard to really say much negative about it. Now, things flip when you get to next week.
Of course, because it always happens.
Yes.
Incidentally, just as a side note, for those wanting to buy this pay-per-view, I probably wouldn't. On Amazon, it's selling for $41.95. So,
well, this is a rare one. I have the actual WDF, whatever it was, home video version. In the case and everything, because one of my friends in college, his dad works for Castrol, and of course they were a major sponsor at this point. Yes. And they would sometimes his dad would send him a huge like box of promo shit that they received. So one day he comes over to our dorm and he's just got this box of hats and shirts and DVDs DVDs, it was tapes and all this other merchandise just for us to pick through. So this is one of the ones I took, was this pay-per-view on actual tape. So I have their release.
I think
version.
I have your copy.
Yeah, I probably took it off.
Yeah, I think
that you one for you.
I think I have your copy. Yeah, it's $42 on Amazon, so just watch it on YouTube. That's what I recommend.
Oh yeah, the full show is on there, so
yeah. So don't kill yourself. All right. Well, you heard from what we had to say, and we both gave it an A. Although you were, according to our written review, you were oh so close to making it a perfect show. But there's other shows that are better than this that we gave A+ to. So it really was tough to make this an A+.
It's up there though. It is up there. It's great.
It's definitely one of the top 10 WWE pay-per-views of all time.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement.
Yeah. So you know what we think. Now we want to hear what you think.
5 minutes of feedback. Let's start with Steve Williams. I attended the show live. I was 18 years old. I graduated from high school later in the week. Before the show, there's a buzz among my classmates that Kid Rock is performing live. The snippet of America Badass played during those Undertaker teasers only fueled the rumor. As for the show itself, I think it's among the better shows of 2000, right up there with the Rumble, Fully Loaded, and SummerSlam. Highlights are Benoit choking out Jericho, Brian Christopher's pants falling off, the Jug Band 5-second pose, Triple H chastising HBK for his shorts, and the main event. I thought Triple H vs. Rock was far better than it had any right to be, especially considering there weren't any run-ins for the first 58 minutes. Many people in the crowd did not recognize Undertaker when he ran in. The finish was mistimed, but I think they did a good job covering the tracks on Raw when they showed an earlier clip of HBK catching Taker using a choke slam. Side note, at this time I recall hearing Rock had pushed a kid down while brawling in the crowd. Then I never heard anything else about it. I always assumed it was bullshit until the kid sued the Rock incident over 2 years ago. Interesting.
I remember that. Fucking asshole. He waits 2 years? Or waits to, what? No, not 2 years. He waits, what, 11 years? It was ridiculous. Todd Weber, I guess. Judgment Day was one of the first pay-per-views where we got to see the WWF present a mid-card that rivaled WCW in quite some time. Before 2000, the WWF had much better main events and more work rate and more interesting stories, but the WWF's 1999 roster at times left much to be desired. We saw bits and pieces of the work rate improving on cards top to bottom, but Judgment Day had great matches with the multi-man tag with Angle, Edge, Christian versus Rikishi and Too Cool, a good European title match, tremendous Benoit versus Jericho match, and a very good, maybe legendary Iron Man match. You could really see the WWF putting more emphasis on the actual in-ring product now that they had the talent outside of the main event scene to put on great matches. A great pay-per-view top to bottom. The only disappointment was the tag team table match, but there really isn't a bad match on the card.
Chris Krager, great follow-up to Backlash. If that was a 9.5, this is an 8.9. Wow. It's hard. I mean, these two shows are very, very good, both.
Yeah.
Edge and Christian show how far they've come personality-wise. The Pipe Rose finish of the Euro title match is unique, and it reminds you how entertaining China could be at times when her head was on straight. Shane show short, but watchable. Had no issue with Shane winning, for guys really win when they're before they're off TV to heal up. Submission match is great. I think Jericho should have won a Backlash, and Benoit get the belt back here. Hated the quick title switch early in May. Table match is blah, but the Dudleys needed something to get involved with since other heel teams were tied up. Iron Man was phenomenal. If WrestleMania 12 was like 1-0 playoff hockey, this is up and down thrill ride like the Lightning Bruins 2011 game, which is also fittingly 6-5. DQ chair and pin sequence by Triple H is a quintessential heel move. Taker's return was unexpected and awesome. Ending seemed sour, but didn't hurt the match. 99 roster's top heavy, 2000's deeper, especially with a loaded mid-card.
Steve Rogers, the pay-per-view debut of Team Eck. Fun trio to enjoy over the course of the next few months. Wonder why Show Shane didn't logically happen last month. By the way, remember during this time that Michael Cole pushed the idea of Road Dogg and X-Pac being the most talented team in the WWF roster at the time?
Yes.
Eesh. Triple H winning the belt back kind of answers the question put forth a year ago with Austin not having a long and defining title reign. That pretty much is a taste of what happened with The Rock, Triple H, and others going forward for quite a few years. In fact, going forward through 2004, only 7 more times will there be a reign of 100 days or more, and only one breaking the 150 mark. In fact, that reign is the longest the WWF Championship reign will be from Shawn Michaels' 227-day reign in 1996 through the big reign that will start midway in 2004. No one is really having that career-defining reign in this era. Fun seeing a new side of Taker. While this one would get stale in a hurry, there was really nothing more they could have done with the, no pun intended for this version, vintage Undertaker after the whole ministry stuff. Speaking of Shawn, this is pretty much it for the original HBK. Next time we see him, both his on-screen character and his IRL self will be slightly different individuals and key aspects. Just something that should be noted, and I believe this is probably the final time for Sean's bicycle shorts as well.
Andrew Reich. As much as I like Backlash for its satisfying ending, consistently good match card, Judgment Day holds a dear place in my heart, along with Fully Loaded, No Way Out, 01, and WrestleMania 17 is a peak of pay-per-view quality, because the Iron Man match takes up a third of its time to get 6 matches, showing that sometimes less is more. Angle, Edge, and Christian's 5-second pose is one of the most hilarious moments in company history. The 6-man tag is a good opener with a hot crowd. 3 of the Radicals duking it out for the European title gave us another fine match and may have been Perry Saturn's best individual with WWE. I didn't care much for Shane pulling out all the stops to defeat Big Show, but it kept up the funny subplot of Shane as the Simba of the McMahon family. Yeah, I meant to mention that. The tables match had more psychology than I expected and showed how insanely popular the Dudley Boys act was at this point. Jericho and Benoit had a rematch that had some flaws and was cut short, but they improved on the Backlash match and established Benoit as a submission machine. Rock Triple H is a masterpiece. If Brett Shawn is the Iron Man for the new generation, this is the Attitude Era version. Shawn's officiating was also fantastic to go with the exhilarating final 15 minutes of the match. The ending left me a little sour, but it was offset by the explosive return of The Undertaker. His nasty chokeslam and X-Pac is still burnt in my memory. All in all, not a single bad match and not a single wasted moment. What I thought was an example of a gold standard pay-per-view. A+. And I want you to read the last one here, Scott.
Okay. Jarrett. Just saw the show a couple weeks ago and was unusually impressed by it. The opener was incredible. The crowd was energetic in ways that I have not seen in a long time, and the chemistry led to a fun, fast-paced match. The other thing I liked was Gerald Briscoe going insane in the locker room because of the 24-7 hardcore title rule and him becoming paranoid of everyone around him. It was so funny that I actually felt sad that it led to the worst match of the year a month later. And I like Undertaker's return and the Iron Man match. Nothing new to be said here. All in all, it is a fun show that I'll go back and rewatch.
All right, there's your 5 minutes of feedback. Thank you all for contributing. Mm-hmm. As always, keep bringing it on. Scott, a couple things I want to mention before we wrap to do with the show. One was we teased it before. Rock was filming scenes for The Mummy during this point. Was it The Mummy or Scorpion King?
2000?
I think it was. God, I just read about it too. God damn it.
Probably Scorpion King.
He misses a couple weeks, but he doesn't miss much time. I thought the Scorpion King.
No, I don't remember missing much time.
I think 01 he films a Scorpion King. I think he's filming. I'm pretty sure he's filming The Mummy. At this point here in 2000. He takes a few weeks off. He's off TV that 1 week, like I mentioned. Let me just confirm. While I'm looking that up, also the Simba thing was very funny, I thought. It says Shane Kim called himself Simba in the McMahon family, and of course, playing off the Lion King.
Yes.
Mummy came out in 2001, so this was he was filming the Mummy scene.
Yeah, Scorpion King came out April 19, 2002.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. So that's why he was off TV a little bit. So I just wanted to make those 2 points, the Mummy and the Simba. So.
The Simba thing is right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that. All right, let's trivia, Scott. We got a trivia matchup. Match number two. Who we got?
Match number two of our final four pits. Mr. Todd Weber taking on Mr. Ryan Everett.
All right, let's listen to that. We'll come back and wrap this up. All right, Skizot, we are back.
Yes, sir.
Match number two here in the Elite Eight of the 2013 PTB Nation Trivia Tournament. Another great matchup for you. First, our good friend from the West Coast, the one and only Mr. Todd Weber. T-Web, how you doing?
Sacramento. Sacramento's where I'm from. They got a million fine women there. I am married to one. All right, that was okay.
You're supposed to say that for your victory song, or you're not confident at all that you're going to you're going to win.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know if I'm going to win. I think we're pretty evenly matched tonight.
All right, and of course, your opponent tonight, the young upstart, knocked off Mr. Jeremy Nichols last round, Mr. Ryan Everett. Ryan, welcome back.
Thank you. I feel unprepared. I don't have a song yet.
Well, you had plenty of time to whip one up. And you didn't. That's you could have sang, like, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, like at Wrigley or something.
I'm a Sox fan.
Ah, I'm sorry.
White Sox.
Sorry. Red Rough year.
They don't sing in the sing in the South side.
You got your Stanley Cup, though, so that's enough.
That's pretty good.
All right, Scott, we know who Mr. Everett defeated. Who did Mr. T-Webb's defeat to get? Oh, I know who it was.
T-Webb defeated another PTB icon.
The tragic clown himself.
Exactly. The tragic clown, Mr. Jordan Duncan. Yeah. So.
Mr. Clean.
Mr. Pagliacci himself.
Even the Andre the Giant run-in couldn't save him from you.
So true. All right, easy, medium, hard, gentlemen. Scott, who is up first?
Mr. Weber, you will be leading off. So you'll be first, which means Mr. Everett will be the home of the rounds. One of each. The winner moves on to the final four. Let us get started. Mr. Weber, pick a number between 1 and 140 in the easies.
Number 132.
Okay.
Got a traipse all the way down to the end of the spreadsheet here.
Well, a lot of those are sitting here, so unpicked. This one is now picked. All right. You have 10 seconds. Which WWF announcer attempted to run for mayor in 1999, coming on the heels of Jesse Ventura's gubernatorial win?
Is that Jerry the King Lawler?
All right. Put it in the left side for Mr. T-Webb. And now, Mr. Everett, chance to match him up.
All right, I'll go with 34.
Okay.
Let's hope this trivia matchup goes better than his campaign did.
Yes, what, he finished fifth or something? All right.
Not well.
Okay. 10 seconds. Which women's wrestler sang America the Beautiful at WrestleMania 5?
Oh, that was the lovely Rockin' Robin.
Very nice. High five.
Can you sing that for us, her version, T-Web, on your guitar? Yes. Play it for us.
Oh, beautiful!
You sound like his brother-in-law, Jake.
What's Jesus, God?
I think that's the Ray Charles version.
Oh, sorry. Yes. That was Sam Houston version.
Yes.
Yes. All right, Ryan.
All right, Mr. Everett, you are now in the... Both of you are now in the mediums. So, Mr. Everett, pick a number. 1 to 191.
50.
Okay. 50. Here we go. All right. 20 seconds. Besides The Undertaker and Mick Foley, who was the only other man to compete in a Boiler Room Brawl match on pay-per-view?
That would be The Big Show.
Pretty good.
Yay.
All right, 2-1. Okay. Mr. T. Right. Webbs.
You are now in the mediums. Pick a number.
Number 3.
Okay. All right. 20 seconds. Which male wrestler brutally assaulted Victoria when he turned heel and joined a hated faction in 2000?
2000. Well, we haven't come up there on the place to be vintage vaults. Hated faction. Ah, wow. Boy, I'm drawing blank. I'm going to say it was Val Venus. Rhymes with penis.
Ooh.
Oh, it's Godfather.
How about new?
It was the Godfather, sir.
Sorry about that.
All right. All right, T-Web is still in this.
I was close.
Still in the mediums. Pick a number.
130.
Okay. All right. 20 seconds. Who did Kevin Steen defeat for the Ring of Honor World Championship in 2012?
This is not my wheelhouse. Kevin Steen wrestles for Ring of Honor. And what's it, a Briscoe brother? No, I'm going to say it was... Claudio Castagnoli.
Good God. Oh, no. It was Mr. Davey Richards.
Welp.
All right, still in this. Welp. Everett's got to put away a hard here. It's not easy. Obviously, they're hard. All right, you got two cracks at this, Ryan.
All right, I'll go with number one.
Actually, this is your only chance to win it outright. If you get this right, you advance. If not, Todd will at least get a chance to match you.
All right. Number one.
Okay. 30 seconds to move on to the final four. Who had the most reigns with the ECW world title?
I'm going to go with the Sandman.
Yes, the Sandman had 5 ECW World Title Championship reigns. And Mr. Everett, your reign runs on as you advance onto the final four. Todd Weber, the dream dies here tonight. It's quite the run you had, sir.
Cinderella boy bites the dust. Good job, Ryan.
Good game.
All right, guys. Congratulations to both of you for making it this far, and Ryan for moving on. So, Scott, let's take a break. We'll come back, wrap up the show. All right, Scott, 2 are in. Steve Willey, Ryan Everett. Yes. Half the Final Four has been decided. Mm-hmm. Next week, we find out the rest.
Yes.
Speaking of next week, we have Monday night, King of the Ring 2000. Mm-hmm. And Wednesday, hopefully Kevin Kelly, just waiting for him to confirm. We'll chat a little Ring of Honor, and then we'll chat a little first half of 2000 WWF.
We got a lot to talk about with him on that, too.
Yes.
A lot of questions. We're looking forward to some great answers from him on some stuff that went on these first 6 months.
No doubt. So the weekend after that, we have our SummerSlam roundtable and our headlines to preview SummerSlam this year's edition.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks out. And then in the weeks after that, our big interviews. If you missed Monday night show, we announced that we'll be interviewing Scott Keith.
Mm-hmm.
And the week after, Christopher Robin Zimmerman, the one and only CRZ. So a little throwback in time for wrestling fans. I've been on the net for a while reading reviews and whatnot. So it should be a lot of fun chatting with those two guys. Really looking forward to both of those. So good week here, Scott. A little 2000 love, a little Ring of Honor with Brad. Thank him for joining us on Monday. Also, please visit PlaceToBeNation.com for all your pop culture needs. Well, you guys have been awesome the last few weeks. So a lot of new likes on Facebook, a lot of new follows on Twitter, and a lot of hits. The hits keep building. So we're not going anywhere. So please join us. Get in on the fun early. If you're a football fan, this is going to be no pun intended, but please. That's Scott. I'm Justin. Everyone, have a great rest of your week. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday night from Boston. Home of the losers.
How about it? Oh, the Mariners will lose.
No, but Kyle Seager, my man, tied it up. He heard me bitching, so it's 4-4 in the bottom of the eighth.
Nice. Spinning.
We'll know by Monday.
Yes, we will. Funny head.
What? I like ACDC.
ZZ Top. We'll see Fist Beasties and the Kings on Rock. Skinner, Seeger, Limp, Korn, the Stones. David Allen Cole with No Show Jones. Yeah! Pass that bottle around. Got the rock from Detroit. Soul from Motown. The underground stone. Fucking pimp. With tracks that Mac can slap back the whack. Never gain away. I don't play with ass. But watch me rock with Liberace Flash. Punk rock the class. Boy bands are trash. I like Johnny Cash and Grandmaster Flash.
Round.